Our next guest is Jeff Klute. He is joining us by phone, and he is with GBS Benefits. Jeff, thank you for joining us on Mound Money.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
So I know your company helps other companies with their insurance needs. Full disclosure, my firm, Albion Financial Group, uses your firm for our benefits work to help us with that. And with that, let's just talk about, you know, what do small businesses use firms like yours to do?
That's a great question. Well, it's quite a few things. So typically, you know, if you look back several years, our business was one that you go out and you find bids for health insurance and all the other ancillary products that go along with employee benefits. And that has evolved quite a bit over the last several years, where we also help with human resource consulting, some ERISA and other employment law type of issues. And really, it's become a business that is focused so much on how to attract and retain employees from a much more higher level than just on the employee benefit piece. So that's what companies use us for, and we're lucky enough to work with so many companies in Park City and all across the Wasatch Back, the Wasatch Front. And in fact, we work with about 2,000 employer groups, and we have about 200 employees in Salt Lake, and many of us live up in Park City and are members of the community here.
Talk a little bit about the decision matrix that a small business of, say, 50 employees faces when evaluating healthcare benefits in the post-Obamacare world. How do they look at it, and what are their options?
Yeah, good question. Thanks. So I would say that two months ago, it was a decision matrix that focused on the balance of cost versus benefit, meaning what's the best value I can get for my employees and their families? And that has changed a lot in the last 2 months. I think, you know, the value question will continue to be there. But I think the challenge is now is the affordability of those plans has come into question. And it went from, you know, we've really gone from an employee-centric environment to employer survival and kind of that 50 and under space. Now, 50 employees and above, there is definitely financial pressure right now, and how are we going to continue to reopen and things like that as it relates to COVID-19. But still, the fact is, the reason, you know, when you're in a healthcare market that's in the private sector, you do have the balance of, you know, as an employer, do I feel some responsibility to provide a plan for my employees? And if I want the best employees in the market, and I'm trying to attract new ones, and I want to retain the ones that have been with me forever, I need to offer the best plan out there that I can afford.
And it's going to get more.
That's typically what the matrix looks like.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
So that's typically what the matrix looks like.
So I'll ask this question. Maybe you can weave in the matrix, because I think the decision, an additional data point in that matrix, is just the reality of coronavirus is increasing the cost of healthcare for Americans as a whole. And how is that? That's probably not going to have a positive impact on premiums as far as for the employers. It's going to get more expensive, I would think, for employers. Is that reasonable logic, or what are you seeing as far as pricing for healthcare premiums given this new world that we're all in?
This answer might take a little bit. So let me build a little bit of the story. So I think it's fair to say that COVID-19, it does present a unique problem in terms of estimating cost, due to just the pure novelty and prevalence throughout the world, right? And for countries with nationalized healthcare, like Great Britain and most of the EU, the onus of determining the associated cost and reimbursing the providers being hospitals and physicians, that really falls on the government entities because it's all their cost. But for countries like the U.S., the payer responsibility, so the insurance company, is spread between government entities, right? So you've got, because Medicare, Medicaid, et cetera. You've got health insurance providers. Some of the large companies in Park City are self-insured, meaning they pay for a majority of the claims. Then you have stop loss and reinsurance. So you have this much more convoluted aspect of who is actually paying the claims. And so what we're seeing is, what are the daily costs of services? So for example, if you're on a ventilator in ICU, like the mid-range estimate is about $15,000 a day. So what I think it makes sense to do is look at what the large cost is on the total disease state. So for example, for someone who is asymptomatic, mild, or moderate, they're not really expensive at all. So if you look at the cases in Summit County, those people are costing between between $100 and $500. But when you get to severe and critical, so if someone is hospitalized and expensive, and this is again across the country estimate, you're talking anywhere between $145,000 and $250,000. So is that expensive? Yes. But is it expensive compared to a lot of other disease states? I'm not sure. The challenge is really going to be finding out what the total cost is, because the nature of the current medical care, it turns out that a significant portion of the medical services that were rendered prior to COVID-19 are now on hiatus because all of the elective and non-critical care in nature has been essentially turned off. So is there going to be a high impact? It's possible. But really what it comes down to is the rates for a majority of plans have been, for all intents and purposes for 2020, have already been determined and filed with the state. Now, the premiums will be reviewed and could potentially be higher in 2021 because of an issue, or what we call in our world is a term called pent-up demand, meaning people haven't received these services. When are they going to start turning them on again? Does that answer your question?
It does, and it sort of leads me to another question. As we see the last week's unemployment numbers were startling, and as we see people losing their jobs, what happens to their health care, and what kind of options do they have to sort of maintain health care coverage?
That's a great question. It's interesting how a lot of it's how employers, really, really treat their employees. Some have had layoffs where others have had, you've heard the term furlough, right? That's become a pretty popular thing. And I think what's nice is a few things. One is, if you're furloughed as an employee, you are considered an active employee for the purposes of employee benefits. And they can be brought back to work without full rehire paperwork. And it's a much quicker process for the company to spin back up. But benefit continuation is based on, some certain factors, and it's a good idea to have employers really understand what these are. The premium can be paid in just a few ways. You can invoice the employee for payment. Some companies, if they're financially secure or they feel that way right now, are offering to pay 100% of the premiums And sometimes they're allowing for the payment deferral for when the employee returns to work to start paying it off. Sometimes the carrier is allowing for continuation of benefits, the insurance carrier. And they, you know, they're extending between 60 and 90 day limits. And then, you know, one thing to think about is that a lot of it's based on, you know, years of service. So all benefits related to the employee based on length of service will not be impacted during the furlough period. And I think that's a big deal. And it's nice that they're able to apply and receive unemployment benefits also, so it's not such a financial impact. Now, that's on the employee side. If someone is laid off or terminated, they always have the option of going on COBRA, and COBRA's been around for probably 30 years now. I don't know the exact date, so bear with me on that. But they can choose to pay their own plan. They can also go on to an individual plan if the COBRA premium is too expensive. So that's an option. And then lastly, there are government options depending on your assets. Some people can go on Medicaid if they have assets below $2,000. So there are a few different options. But what I would do is, if you're an employee and this is something that has either happened to you or there is an anticipation of it happening, I would be very communicative with the HR department or your employer. Whether it's a super small company and you work directly with the owner, be very communicative. And then that person can reach out to whoever they work with at whatever agency or insurance company they work with. And as a resort also, they can always reach out to us and we can help walk through options. But yeah, I think that answers your question, hopefully. But it is going to be a different world. And then, you know, the reality is that changes when people start coming back to work and how they find these temporary solutions.
Your answer sort of gave rise to two minor questions. One is whether or not the concept of a furlough somehow precludes one from getting unemployment benefits. And the other is whether or not the loss of a job would create the opportunity under Obamacare to be able to apply for an exchange plan. Is it a qualifying event that would open up the notion of being able to apply for exchange plans?
Great clarifying question on the Obamacare one. Yes, the answer is yes. That does offer a qualifying event. I think the challenges that we're experiencing right now on the Obamacare market is the insurance companies, which we anticipated this many, many months before they launched the Obamacare plans, is that when you get rid of any, or when you have guarantee issue, which, you know, you can debate that all day long whether it's a good idea or not. When you have guarantee issue on plans and no pre-existing conditions, you bring in people that haven't paid any premium and get utilization of services right away, and it's going to increase cost. Well, what the insurance companies did is they lost money, was they raised plan deductibles and plan out-of-pocket maximums. So I say with a little bit of caution is, but yes, you can make that move. The challenge is that we're seeing out-of-pocket maximums that are frequently, you know, $7,000, and most of us will never, ever use that. So it's something to pay attention to. Really understand your plan when you look at the Obamacare plans. Really understand if it is a limited network, meaning a smaller physician or hospital network. Really understand what the deductible means. And call and talk to people. People are willing to help you out and helping you understand the terms of what these mean. Because not everybody, I've been doing this for, 24 years, and there are still things that we learn every day.
It's very,
of us do in a lot of our businesses.
Yeah, it's very frustrating for the average American. We can't let you go without asking this question. May is Mental Health Month. Talk to us about not only did Obamacare offer this third alternative for people, for health insurance. It also made some mandates, like we got rid of pre-existing condition clauses. Do most people's health care plans include some mental health coverage? This is a very stressful time, and I know a lot of people are wondering about that.
It really is. a lot, yes, the Obamacare, I mean, every plan now has mental health parity, which means that it's treated like every other illness. And mental health is something that we have taken on a very strong approach to. When we work with a lot of employers, now, so there's two questions there. One is Obamacare, yes, in short. On a much more global scale, mental health is becoming a focus of many employers, small and large. And this coronavirus, COVID-19, and you know, you think about many people use their employer also as a little bit of a social outlet. And what we have seen is definitely an uptick in domestic abuse cases. There is, you know, relapse of substance abuse to drug and alcohol. And we feel really horribly and have such a soft spot in our hearts for people that deal with mental health and substance abuse issues. So what a lot of the insurance companies have done is made telemedicine free. And so, meaning there is no copay when you call in to your employee assistance program, also known as an EAP, that's usually attached to your health insurance plan. So by all means, if you are having trouble, stress, anxiety, depression, whatever it might be, use the phone, call in. It's confidential. Your employer, your health insurance company will never know the call occurred, and use that, because it is a really, really stressful time financially also. And that has a big impact on everybody. So great question. And I'm happy to expand more on that if you'd like. So,
okay. Jeff, we wish we had more time and that you could. Unfortunately, we need to wrap it up. I do want to share one thing with the audience before we go, and just the importance of doing it. And I'm glad that mental health is coming into the light. This is a stressful time. And full disclosure, your co-host on Mound Money, Doug Wells, reached out to my EAP and said, you know what, this is a stressful time. I need to talk to somebody. So if you need help, reach out. People are there. Don't go through this on your own. It's a very stressful time. So, Jeff, we thank you again. Our guest has been Jeff Kluge with GBS Benefits and Mound Money. We'll be right back.